Welcome to the You Can Man Podcast, episode 67. I'm Dave.
I'm Tim. And Josh ain't here.
And on this week's episode, Engineering with Dave.
All right, guys, welcome back to the You Can Man Podcast, where we believe what one man can do, you can do as well with a little help from your friends and the proper know-how. Josh is not with us. And we had to take a break last week, too, because of Josh.
Yeah, I would say he's not with us, you know, by decision.
It was a choice. The You Can Man army over here, Josh.
Seriously. Mean, what's up? Well, look, all right. It's week two of his vacation. And the guy, he can't be bothered to come on the podcast and to be here for the You Can Man army. And I don't know, something about, did he say that he was having power issues?
Yes, he's like, the power's going in and out and I can't rely upon my cell coverage to call in.
Yeah.
And I kind of need to do like a Wi-Fi call and I can't.
Also,
the power's going in and out.
Is the 1 hour drive, is that just a bridge too far? I mean,
you know, I thought the same thing. I was like, man, I think I'd get my car.
Dude, just drive down here. I would be here for the You Can Man army. That's all I'm going to say. But Josh has made the decision that he's not going to be here. I mean, yeah. There's his empty chair right there.
Facebook group, feel free to weigh in on this decision by Josh. We welcome your opinions. So I'm finally done with the loft beds.
Finished, like completely finished?
Yeah. I mean, my part. I think my wife needs to go back and paint a couple little things. But yeah, I think that I'm done. So I need to post some pictures. However, my wife had done it all up nice for, like, we did like a reveal for the girls.
Oh, so they hadn't seen it?
Well, they had, but they just hadn't seen it with like their beds on it and all that kind of stuff. And so we did this kind of, you know, little video reveal thing for them and it looked great. And then we were just like, okay, tomorrow this is going to be destroyed. Sure enough, I mean, it pretty much was.
It was just mayhem in there.
So I'm going to have to kind of get it back to picture ready.
Oh, right. Well, you've taken a lot of pictures. You know, I need you to do, I don't know, like a montage or a collage or something.
Yeah, I really didn't do such a great job because I was under a little bit of a time crunch. So I thought about
it was like a 2 month time crunch. It took forever, didn't you?
Well, that's why. I mean, it was like it just kept dragging out. So I was like, look, I can't be taking time to do like nice pictures along the way.
It was a serious project. Like it was quite an undertaking.
Oh yeah, no doubt. So it's impressive. It looks awesome. I do have the SketchUp, so I could kind of do a little video walk around of the SketchUp.
Yeah, maybe do a tutorial. I'm sure people would appreciate that.
Yeah, I mean, there's not going to be a whole lot to it. I mean, it's going to be like, yeah.
You're the one who brought it up, right? I'm just
built a wall here, and it's basically kind of built like a deck, sort of. It's just two platforms and a wall.
It's a good-looking deck.
Kind of. I did build these, like, cubbies, but really it's just a plywood box.
I mean, really like showing my wife. I didn't like showing her those pictures. Kind of like with Luke's loft bed, because she's like, oh, can you do that? And I'm like, no, I'm not going to. We're not doing that.
Dude, you can totally do that.
Oh, I know I can do it. I know I can do it.
Now, my son's, Luke's, the one you're referring to, which you can find on youcanman.com. It's the most visited blog post on youcanman.com.
Go check it out.
Just type in loft beds and you should be able to find it. That one wasn't nearly as involved. I mean, you could totally do that in a weekend, easy.
Yeah, it looks great, but you could tell that there was a lot less steps, or just it was a lot, like you said, less involved.
Yeah, totally. But what else has been going on with you, Dave?
Well, in the past 2 weeks, you may be wondering, has Dave lost power at his house? And yes, I have. So last podcast, I think it was the last one, I went on a rant about how terrible Marietta Power is. And they are continuing to be the worst power company on the face of the planet. It was a clear blue day. Sunny skies,
wow.
Zero wind, no earthquakes, no nothing. And the power just goes out randomly. I don't know what the heck happened. I always get out there and drive around and pretend like I'm going to yell at the power guys, but they weren't out there yet.
Do you think it's maybe the age of all the transformers?
I don't know what it is, but again, whenever it goes out, you can go onto their terrible website and report an outage. And whenever I do that, it always says, I think it's 1,127 affected customers. It's always just my neighborhood or like a little area around my neighborhood that's out. I'm telling you, it happens all the time. Married to power, you need to get your stuff together. You are the Comcast of power companies. Like, you're the worst.
That's
the worst of the worst.
That's a bold claim.
I've never seen a power company. I've never been a part of a power company that was worse than Married to Power. They're just terrible. The power goes out all the time.
Do we need to tag them or something?
We need to do something. Like, I don't know what else to do except to like go over there. I mean, their property is all chained, you know, it's fenced in, so I can't like, you know, go on the property and demand to speak to them. Whatever. Anyway.
I would be interested to see, man, if we could get, we need to get like a lineman on the show, you know?
Now, that's the thing. I've had an issue at my house where we had a tree fall on our power line and it ripped the power mast off the roof. I've talked about it on the podcast before. And whenever I've talked to like some guys came out, they were super nice guys. They were really down to earth, easy to talk to, very apologetic. They were like, hey, we got to cut your power off. I'm really sorry. They were super cool. Whenever I've gotten anybody on the phone there, always very nice, but they just provide terrible service. They need to get it together. Whatever.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on with that, but
it's not good.
Yeah, I've been continuing a lot of hiking. Now, when I say hiking, I really mean trail running.
It's like spirited. I was going to say spirited walking, but you're really running, aren't you?
I'm pretty much going hiking briskly up to the top of the mountain, and then I'm pretty much running from there on out. And I've got this like 5.5 mile.
Where do you park? Do you park generally at like the
at the visitor center?
So you go over the mountain.
Yes.
And then do you cut, like you go over to the other side, you come back around the mountain? Is that
yes.
how you do it?
For okay. those of you guys that have not listened to the podcast previously and you're just joining us, thank you for joining us. I'm talking about Kennesaw Mountain National Battlefield Park, best green space in all of Metro Atlanta, in my opinion. And I've been doing a lot of hiking there, and I talk often about it because I love it so much. And so that's what we're talking about. But yeah, I've been doing what I used to do in 2 hours and about under an hour and 10 minutes.
Whoa, I needed you to get that sub 60 minutes.
Yeah. Oh, also, big news, Josh, if he was here, I'd rail on him about this because I got the GPS watch finally.
You did. We're all very happy for you.
Official Garmin GPS watch. I love it. I don't think I'll ever go back. Like, I think I'll always have a GPS watch. It's so
Here's what's weird. I don't think I've ever seen you wear a watch.
I don't.
You're not a watch person.
I haven't been. But
you got it on now.
So now, you know, Josh would always dog on me. No, your times are off. Your phone is like, you know, it's not accurate.
GPS or it didn't happen.
Well, you know what? I finally did it and I got just, and I mean just over, like 4/10 of a second over 7-minute mile. So I feel very confident now that I could do a sub 7-minute mile. Y'all, I'm turning 39 in a month, okay?
Yeah, not a whole lot of running under your belt. Like, you started, what, 6 months ago? Eight months ago?
8 months ago, I think. Yeah, roughly.
It's impressive.
So, yeah, I feel pretty confident that I can do it. And I didn't warm up to do that. So that's another thing. I should have warmed up and then did my mile. Like, how fast can I do this? I'm going to be bold here and say that I think if I was on a track, I think I could do a 6.5-minute mile.
Woo! I think we need to find a track. I mean, I know where a track is. Sure. We need to go to one.
Yeah, I'm really interested to see if I can do it. Okay, Dave, this episode is all about you.
Let's set this up and say Tim has put me on the spot tonight. I didn't want to talk about myself. It's not something I like to do, but Tim's
That's exactly why we're doing
this. Tim was like, this is going to be great.
There's no better opportunity. It's just me and you here, Dave.
Yeah,
just me and
you. It's really, really intimate.
Yeah. And so I just thought this would be a really good opportunity to talk about what Dave does because we're always joking back and forth, quote unquote, professional engineer, which Dave is.
Yep.
He is a professional engineer. So I wanted to ask him questions about how he became an engineer. What's it like? What do you actually do? So for those of you that are wondering, what does an engineer actually do? What, like, actually day in and day out? I think we've all kind of got an idea, obviously, in our head about what an engineer is, but there's all kinds of different engineering, right? So we're going to hone in on Dave's specific branch of engineering, which is structural engineering, specifically with wood. Yes, and Dave can go more into that. It looks like you're about to correct me.
That is incorrect. It's okay. All building materials.
All building materials. Okay. I thought before you were like kind of specialized just.
I did specialize in wood, but we'll get into that.
Okay. So I wanted to start kind of with just the most basic of basic questions. What made you want to become an engineer?
That's something that I ask myself every day. I don't really know exactly.
Like, why did I do this?
Yeah. No, not like that. But it's kind of an interesting, I don't want to say story, but when I was young, I was terrible at math. And when I say I was terrible at math, like I was the worst kid in the room.
Really?
At math. Like they used to be like, hey, David, why don't you go outside with Miss So-and-so into the lunchroom and you're just going to get a little bit of extra work with this.
Right.
Right. And so I was just so terrible. Had a tutor who helped me out a ton, but I was really bad at it. And I think that's probably part of why I ended up. I was so bad at it and it bothered me so much. It really like.
To just show yourself that you could overcome that?
Yeah. I think there's a little bit of that to it. I was just, it bothered me that I was so bad at it. So I was like, I'm going to get good at it. And then I'm not going to say good, but I got a lot better at it and just kept going with it. My grandfather was a civil engineer, which is what I am by education. So my grandfather was a civil engineer. My cousin's a civil engineer. And so I just kind of followed in that, those footsteps. And I also knew, I was like, if I'm going to go to college for what ended up being 7 years, okay, to get a 4-year degree, whatever. I was like, I want to get a degree that's going to get me a job like 100%. Like, I don't want to get a degree that I'm, you know, not going to be able to gain employment
like
from.
Like art history or something like that.
Right. So I loved music when I was younger. I would have loved to have been a music major, but I didn't want to be a teacher. And so there wasn't, you know, I wanted a degree that I knew was going to get me a job right out of school. And I knew there was actually in the engineering department, they had some statistics up and it said 3 months after you graduate, civil engineers from this school have 100% employment. And I was like, whoa, that's pretty good.
And what school was that, Dave?
That was Southern Polytechnic State University. Nice. Rest in peace.
Yeah, which has now been absorbed.
It was absorbed.
By Kennesaw State University. Yep. Still weird driving by that campus.
It is weird. It's like driving on it. It's weird. You know, yeah. They just kind of rebranded everything. So KSU didn't have an engineering program.
Right.
Southern Poly didn't have a ton of money. And so basically they just like combined forces and whatever.
Okay. So that leads us to the next question, which has to do with school. I kind of want to know, how bad was it? Because when I think about engineering school going through that, I mean, I guess you kind of touched on it being, you know, not very good at math and then you overcame that. But obviously, to go through that schooling, you have to be dedicated to math and be top of your game for it. So, I mean, how bad was that? Somebody thinking about engineering and they're just dreading the schooling of it. How bad was it?
I'll say this. It's certainly not easy, but it's kind of, I hear people in other walks of life that say, you know, they go through these tough seasons of life or whatever. And they just say, you know, as long as you don't quit, then, you know, I just never quit. I just showed up every day or whatever. And I made it through it. Well, that was really how it was with engineering school. A lot of people, you know, they quit after the first semester, after the first year, because it is tough. The first 2 years are really tough. You go through a lot of classes and they kind of used to call them like weed out classes where they would,
sure,
you know, they'd just be kind of, you know, getting rid of the people that didn't want to be there. And as long as you don't quit, I mean, you can make it through it. If I can do it, anybody can. I mean, that's cliche to say, but
you can, man.
You can, man. I mean, it was definitely tough. I failed a lot of, well, I shouldn't say I failed a lot of classes. I got a lot of C's and I was trying to transfer to a different school. And so I couldn't transfer with a C. So I had to retake a lot of classes. I took every calculus at least twice.
Whoa.
Yeah, because I kept getting C's in them. It was tough. It's not easy. I mean, you have to take Calc 1, Calc 2, Calc 3, a lot of physics, a lot of chemistry. So it's certainly not easy, but it is very doable as long as you don't quit. You know, keep getting after it and you can make it through it.
That's interesting to hear you say all those calculus classes that you had to take, because I specifically chose my path in college to avoid all of those math courses.
Yeah, those math courses.
I'm just like,
terrible.
I don't want to do that.
It's not fun.
Yeah. Okay. So you talked a little bit that your schooling was civil engineering, and technically that's the path, but you are a structural engineer.
Right.
So talk to us about your specialty. What are you doing?
If you want to be a structural engineer, I don't think there are any structural engineering programs, like structural engineering specific degrees out there. There may be one or two, but by and large, if you want to be a structural engineer and design buildings, then you get a civil engineering degree. And that's kind of like an umbrella. You get to kind of pick a little track after that. You can go structural, you can go transportation, which is like designing roads and highways, or you can go wastewater treatment, which is basically, I mean, it's treating wastewater. It's designing those treatment plants. But anyway, I chose structural. It's what interested me the most. And so, yeah, what do I do every day? I think I get asked that a fair amount. I think a lot of people don't really understand what I do. And so I do a lot of different things, but the best way I can describe it is I work with architects really closely. So what they do, the architects, super smart people, but they're very creative. They have a vision for a building, and they put a building on paper. They draw it out. They map it out, you know, kind of the layout of it. They determine all of that. They decide what they want it to look like. And a lot of times they have some visions of grandeur. But anyway, they come up with a layout for a building and a look of a building. And then they, you know, say kind of, how do we build this? They're really good at putting buildings together and laying them out and making them look very good. But they can't really tell you, how big does this beam need to be? How big does this column need to be? How big does this footing need to be?
I'm just trying to envision the drawings that they're sending to you. Are they just giving you some like an elevation of the outside of the building and be like, this is the general shape that I want? Or how detailed are the drawings that you then have to deal with?
It depends on where we're brought in the process. Generally, we'll get kind of their first pass. And so we'll get a bunch of what we call plan sheets, which are basically kind of like if you're flying over the building and you're looking at it, you know, from up high. So we'll get all of the plan sheets of all the different levels, and we'll get some elevations and maybe some 3D renderings. And then we'll... you know, when we kick off a project with an architect, we'll go meet with them, and we'll kind of talk through things and what are some things that they want to do, what are some things they don't want to do, some things they want to stay away from. You know, a good example is they'll say, so like for multifamily buildings or apartment buildings, like these 4 and 5 story live, work, play kind of places where you have apartment buildings on the 2nd through 5th level, and then down below you have like retail. It's real popular right now. Those kind of places, a lot of times they'll have balconies that are, we call them cantilever balconies. They're unsupported on the outside, so there's no columns for these balconies. So they'll say, well, we want to do cantilever balconies. And those look really cool, like they kind of look like they're floating out from the building, but it's, you know, technically kind of hard to do that. So the, you know, that's like a big question is, you know, how do we support these balconies and make these things work where they're just kind of floating with no columns? Figuring that kind of stuff out is what I do. It really gets down to I design the columns, the size of the columns. I mean, if you open up the steel manual, there's hundreds of different beam sizes in there. And they're, you know, so we have a beam in a building. What size does it need to be? I don't know. Like, go ask an engineer. So that's kind of what I do.
Okay. How many times are you having to tell architects, no, your vision is not going to happen?
I like to say that I make architects' dreams come true, but I also crush a lot of architects' dreams.
Okay. And so, are you the guy that has to bring that news, or do you just crunch the numbers and then somebody else has to tell them, yeah, your fancy design is actually not going to work?
We generally will tell them. So we're generally hired by the architect, and so we have a real close working relationship with them. Most of the architects out there are super smart. They're really on their game and they're really experienced. And so they kind of know what they can do and what they can't do. But sometimes they'll come to us and say, hey, we really want to do this crazy thing. How do we do it? We can really make anything work, but it's, how expensive is it going to be?
Right.
That's kind of what, I mean, my job boils down to, hey, we need to support this building as cheaply as possible. It's essentially what we're doing, making it as light of a structure as possible, which means it's a less expensive structure. So there are some times where we have to have some honest conversations with an architect and say, hey, you know, these 3-story tall, you know, tall spaces with no, you don't want any columns and you want it all windows. You know, we have to kind of narrow
that. We can do that.
We can do it and it's possible, but it's going to kill the budget. It's going to be way, you know, they're not going to be able to afford it, that kind of thing. So sometimes we have to have those conversations.
So you put them in a position of having to pick their battles because they're obviously responsible to their clients.
Sure. Yeah.
And they've got to work within their budget as well. So based on your feedback, they're probably picking and choosing which features or hills they're going to die on.
That's a big part of the design process is we'll get like halfway through designing a building on the architecture and in the engineering side. And they'll kind of give the drawings to the owner and they'll start pricing it. And we'll go through a process that's called VE or value engineering, where they kind of start pulling things out and they'll say, oh, okay, we don't want to do cantilever balconies because that's very expensive. We're going to add columns in and make it a lot cheaper. And so they'll kind of pick and choose their battles through the VE process and kind of bring that cost back down under control a little bit.
Okay. Talk to me about, let's say that multifamily mixed use development, shops on the bottom, very popular now, planned little community thing. How long is that process? Now, not counting like zoning and stuff like that and them securing the property, nothing like that. It's just the architect, they hire the architect and they say, we want this many dwellings, whatever. What is that typical turnaround? Like, how long does that take?
As quickly as possible is generally the time frame, but that's what we hear a lot is we need these drawings yesterday. But in general, it depends on how big it is and how complicated it is, and you know, is there a parking deck involved? Does the building wrap around a parking deck? Is there no parking deck? Is there a basement? All these kinds of things kind of play into that equation. But in general, the design process takes anywhere from about 3 to 6 months to go from zero to a full set of drawings. Now, I've been part of buildings that, you know, take a year and, you know, sometimes it'll go on hold. Like they'll pause it and say, hey, you know, they're having trouble with financing and maybe it's not going to work out or,
right.
You know, that kind of stuff. But generally three to six months, sometimes a little bit shorter, sometimes a little bit longer.
And you're pretty much always under the gun because these developers, they've got carrying costs. I mean, they're having to pay all these bills and they're not making any return.
They're not making any money on this building until they open it up. So they want to get it open as quickly as possible. And so we are under the gun a lot. Sometimes they're, you know, project timelines have a little bit longer timeline. And so we're not under the gun as much, but there are milestones within that process. So we'll have a 25% set, a 50% set, like 50% completion set that we'll hand to the owner, 75%, that kind of thing. And so they'll kind of price it throughout that process. So we do have milestones that we have to hit, but in general, 3 to 6 months-ish to get a building fully designed like that.
Okay. What is the most satisfying thing about your work?
Ooh, good question. So
when you leave or?
Yeah, when I clock out every day. No, it's not that. It's construction can be, it can be pretty stressful. And sometimes there are long hours, but you know, that's one of the most rewarding things is,
going on site to look at stuff. Cause you've said that before. Like, I feel like
I do enjoy that. I mean, really seeing, it sounds so cliche, but like engineering the future, like that kind of thing, being able to see, you know, driving by a building that you designed.
Right.
That's going to be there for 100 years is really,
hopefully if it doesn't fall down.
Yeah. Dave. Fingers crossed. Seeing a building that you designed or you had a hand in designing is really, really rewarding. It's really cool to go out there on site and see, like, there's that huge beam that I designed. Like, I saw a picture of a friend who was standing next to this beam that was like, I mean, it was literally like 4 feet tall. Like, it was a gigantic beam. And just seeing that kind of stuff out in the field and then seeing the completed product is really, really satisfying.
You drive by with the kids and you're like, hey. Yeah.
And they're just like, yeah, whatever, dad, like, who cares? Everybody's dad designs buildings.
But when they're older, they will really appreciate that. I think that they will.
Yeah, it's definitely a cool thing to see that completed product.
And I'm glad we're doing this podcast and I'm interviewing you about all this because I don't have something like this with my dad. I mean, he's still living, so I can talk to him about it. But I would have loved to have had, especially earlier on in his career, I don't know. Just a side note there of passing on that information that you wouldn't normally just sit down and talk to your sons. Maybe you would. I don't know. But about this is what daddy does every day.
Yeah, I don't.
They're not going to care right now, but maybe, you know, 15 years from now, they might.
They'll be able to grasp it better then. Like when I was a kid, my dad worked. He was in advertising at Coca-Cola amongst, you know, other companies he worked for. But that was where he was the longest while I was a kid. And I just thought it was cool that I could go to his office and hit the button on the Coke machine and get a free Coke.
Yeah.
Like, that's all I cared about.
Right.
See, I can't bring that. I don't bring that to the table with my children. So who knows what they'll think.
Yeah, but I don't know.
Hopefully they'll appreciate it.
Yeah, totally. Okay. What do you least like about your job?
Ooh, that's a good one. That's a good one.
Where do you start? Like,
a lot of times we, a lot of times we get questioned on our design a lot. And so, you know,
I think this is going to lead to my next question.
Okay, May. So, like, I mean, what it boils down to, what I do is, depending on where a building is going to be in the country or in the world, we figure out essentially how hard is the wind going to blow in a pretty much a hurricane situation, or how hard is the earth going to shake? Okay,
and right.
in a seismic event, then what is the building used for? How many people are going to be in it? And we design based on that, on those parameters, and we go through a long process to design this building and. We have to make decisions along the way, like, hey, this column works based on the loads that we have applied to it, but it just barely works. And it's a really important column. It's supporting a really important area of the building. And so we're going to beef that column up a little bit. Sometimes we'll get questioned on that type of design where, I mean, this isn't a great example, but it kind of gets the point across.
Like, is that really necessary?
Yeah, they'll say, you know, do we really need that column to be that big? And then sometimes you'll get peer reviewed by another engineer, and another engineer will say, that column's over-designed by a lot. And there's reasoning behind it. But then when you take it out of context, you know, sometimes that questioning can be kind of frustrating. And then, you know, you're under the gun a lot. You know, like I said, these developers, they want to get these buildings occupied as quickly as possible because they're not making money until they do. And so, you know, a lot of times you get pushed pretty hard in the design process to get it done very quickly. And most of the time it's not a big deal. But sometimes you can run into situations where you're not able to do your due diligence because you're having to do it so quickly, and you can run into issues there.
Right.
So that can be difficult sometimes too.
Yeah, this has everything to do with actually, and this is just my last question. And I know you've talked a lot about this before. Okay. The beef between engineers, architects, and contractors.
Ooh, that's a good one.
I mean, maybe we're opening up like a whole nother show topic there, but you talk an awful lot about that. You name it, personality differences, how you work, prioritizations of different things. When you've talked about it, it seems like there's these three different worlds. And you've said like sometimes the architects can be cool and like they'll learn more of your kind of side of things, and sometimes maybe with the contractors, but not nearly as much. Right.
I don't know if I've ever said that to him. No, I have. That is true. There, you do have these different camps. That was a good point. Like the architects, the engineers, and the contractors. You also have MEP, which is mechanical, electrical, and plumbing. Those guys. So those engineers, you have the electrical engineers, the mechanical engineers. We're all kind of on the design side. A lot of times it turns into the design kids and then the construction guys. And, you know, there can be some battles there. It's one of those 80-20 rules. 80% of the time, everything works out really well, and everybody is on the same team, and we're all working really hard to get, you know, to get to the same point. You know, you'll have maybe some spirited conversations, but 80% of the time it goes really well. 20% of the time you'll have, you know, some people that are difficult to work with, and I mean it's engineers too. Engineers can be, I mean, everybody knows they're not the best people, you know, people, right?
Like
they don't communicate so well. And so, you know, 20% of the time you have those struggles. And, you know, I don't know what it's like to be out in the field trying to get this building built and
sure.
all the issues that they have to deal with. They don't know what it's like to be on the design side and, you know, to be under the gun
right.
and trying to design this building and get it, you know, everything correct on the drawing so that they can build a crate. So sometimes you have to put yourself in the other person's shoes and kind of look at it from their point of view and, you know, the things that they're having to deal with. So that can be a struggle sometimes, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I can imagine that every single one of those groups of people is thinking the other two groups are the ones holding them up.
Yeah, you do run into that sometimes. But again, by and large, everybody, for the most part, especially the people that have been doing it a while, they kind of understand, you know, everybody's dealing with something. You know, everybody has a bad day to a certain extent, but in general, people are kind of on the same team.
Okay.
But there is that undercurrent.
And your newer job, you've got kind of in-house people because it's more of like a design build.
It is. It's a design build company. So, yeah, we were using the example of an apartment building. I used to do a lot of apartment buildings at my the old company or the company I used to work with. Now I'm working actually for a contractor, a design build contractor, and they have brought engineering in-house. And so we're doing we're working very closely with the contracting side and the construction side. And so we have in-house architecture, in-house engineering. Most of the time, or a lot of the time, you have everybody's in a different company, a different office. So you have a contracting company, you have an engineering company,
right.
You have an architecture company. Where I work now, it's all under one roof.
Is it making it any easier? I know you've only been there like a month.
Yeah, I've been there only a couple months now, but there are a lot of benefits to the design build side. Everybody being under one roof, there's a lot to be said about that. And so the communication process a lot of times is much more improved. The contractors also, they're at the table a lot earlier, and so they get to put their input into the building a lot sooner. So a lot of times a lot of things go much smoother.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's all I got for us for now. I mean, you being a professional engineer comes up quite a bit, so we'll definitely be talking about it again. But good riddance, Josh. I mean, we really need you?
I don't think we do. Look, this is going swimmingly.
Who needs Josh's positive attitude here?
I did the intro today, and it went fine.
It really did. One take, too. We didn't have to redo that.
Nope.
We did have to look up to see what number episode we were on.
And it did.
But, you know, other than that.
It sounded kind of weird, if I'm being honest. But we made it happen.
And Josh will be back next week, so don't fear. Josh will be back. No issues. All right, guys. That's going to do it for this week's show. Thanks so much for tuning in. No bonus segment this week, but we'll be back with that as well. Don't you worry. We'll be back with that. Take some time to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. Check out our Facebook group if you have not done so already. We'd love to see you there, and we will catch you guys next time.